Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting on January 11th, 2010. And we're very pleased to see as many people here as there are. And we welcome your comments as we go through the agenda. If any particular item you'd like to speak to, just let us know by raising your hand. We always like to open our meetings up like that and keep them open. So, again, thank you for being with us, and we look forward to hearing any comments that you may have tonight. As we begin our meeting, if you would, desire, stand with us for our prayer and our Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us please bow our heads in prayer. O most gracious and heavenly Father, we pause to give thanks to you. Thanks for a new year. Thanks for new opportunities. And thanks for new challenges. Father, you so richly blessed us in 2009 in many, many countless ways. And you helped us to kick off this year with a wonderful celebration of 175 years that you've stayed with us, dear God. And again, we say thank you. Father, as we look around, we ask you to go with each family that is represented in the audience today, but bless our entire city. Father, we ask for you to bless the leadership of this council, our mayor, our city manager, the staff, who day by day encounter numerous concerns, but numerous opportunities to make our city better as well. Oh God, as we approach this agenda tonight, we ask that you go with us in thought, in our hearts, in our mind, and guide us in every way. Give us wisdom that we may not possess at this very moment, but guide us as we discuss the issues that impact people every day. Father, we're always happy to give you all the honor, all the glory in everything we do. We pray this in your son's name. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any deletions or additions necessary for the agenda this evening?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to add to the agenda Katie Lipscomb, who would like to provide some insight or some information that she'd like council to hear at the on our agenda, please.
Okay, we can add that under petitions and requests. That'll be only one so far. Okay. Thank you. Anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor of the agenda as written, amended, passes unanimously. Next item is the minutes of the meeting of December 14th, 2009.
Mr. Mayor, I move approval of the minutes.
Okay. Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. We're fortunate to have a presentation this evening. We always enjoy these very much when we can honor several folks, one or more people, for something they've done outstandingly. So with further ado, I'll turn this over to Roger LeDuc, City Manager.
Again, we're indeed very fortunate that within all of our departments here and staff, there are a number of outstanding individuals who work for the city and individuals that help the city on a regular basis. Tonight we get to honor three individuals, Phil Burley, Jeff Metz, and McDaniel Parker. And with that, I'd like to have Glenn Parker come up and make those presentations of these three individuals who have done an outstanding job, two who are city employees and one who is a volunteer.
Thank you, Roger. PRT has been very fortunate over the years to win a number of awards for our agency and for programs and facilities, but several of the staff got together months back and we decided we wanted to recognize some of the individuals that make up our team, and we're very fortunate to recognize three of those tonight. One thing I would warn other department heads, though, don't ever have three individuals at one conference win awards. I've told more lies over the last 4 or 5 months to these employees and others about having to get them to this conference, so that was probably the trickiest part of the whole thing. The first person we'd like to recognize this evening is Phil Burley, and Phil won the Central District Merit Award. This award recognizes a South Carolina Recreation and Parks Association member for their contributions and their outstanding performance in their job and in the community. Phil's been with the department, with the city, since 1985, came to work as a one-person athletic department. He ran it all back in those days. Then Phil transferred over and actually ran the Aiken Mile Track when the city ran the mile track. Now Phil serves as the assistant director, and in that role he oversees the parks division, 32 employees, very large budget, the largest part of the parks division's, the park department's budget. But he's also involved not just with us. He does a lot of work at St. Paul's for his children. He's done a number of projects at East Aiken. I think he's becoming the team or the band dad for South Aiken Band. So he's very involved in our community. Two things I would say about Phil. There's always somebody in your department if you need something too. That's the person you go to or staff goes to. That's Phil Burley in our case. If we need something done, we go to Phil. The other thing I would mention is with all these lies we were telling about how I was trying to get this person to conference and not know they were getting an award, I finally had to sit down with Phil, and in order to recognize McDaniel, for the last award, Phil chose not to come to conference to receive his award so that he could be there when McDaniel got his award. And I think that says everything about Phil Burley and his character. So with that, I'd like to ask Phil to come up.
Didn't get to receive this first time, not in person anyway, got that at a later date, because I did choose not to go to conference. But I want to thank a lot of people, council, over the years, all your support. Well, my family is here, without their support, I couldn't do what I do.
The next person we'll recognize this evening is Jeff Metz. Jeff won the South Carolina Young Professional of the Year Award, and this goes to an individual in the field of parks and recreation who's been in the field for less than 10 years. Jeff's been with us for 5 years. We stole him away from Spartanburg County to come down here. Since that time, Jeff's been heavily involved in recruiting our tournaments to come into Citizens Park. He's been really a force in getting these tennis tournaments to come into town that we've started getting the last couple of years. Last year we had two state tournaments, and we'll have others coming in this year. I think Jeff, and I say this because I see Colleen up here, you know, Jeff's one of his favorite loves is he gets to run the farmer's market and help do that. And that's very odd for someone who has an athletic background and an athletic nature to run the farmer's market. And he and his staff do a great job of that. I think the interesting lie that I had to tell with Jeff is Jeff was co-chair of the awards committee for our state association this year. So when it came time for the committee to meet and to discuss and select the award winners, we had to rig a phone call that Jeff had to come out and be out of the office for just to be out of the conference room for a few minutes while they actually discussed his award. And the other thing Jeff wanted to do, he wanted to look at the PowerPoint to make sure everything was right before it went before the conference that evening. So we couldn't let him look at the PowerPoint either. But Jeff has a lot of potential for this department. He's a great young leader who's recognized around the state, and we'd like to recognize him this evening. Jeff Metz.
Again, I'll reiterate what Phil said. Me and my family are very fortunate to live and work here and work for such a fine department that Glenn Parker leads for us. Thank you, guys.
The last award, I think, is one that I was more excited for this individual to get this award than any of the other two. The other two get a paycheck every other Friday. This guy doesn't. This guy does it because it's in his heart to do these kind of things. And that's McDaniel Parker. We hired McDaniel's brother about 11 years ago. We didn't realize we were getting a two-for-one special at the time. Willie Parker, his brother, works in the Parks Division and Fields Division. And McDaniel just started showing up. And he showed up, and he showed up. And he routinely comes when he's available and works with us from 7 to 3:30. I think one of the most dedicated things you could say about McDaniel is he even comes to some staff meetings, and none of us like going to staff meetings. So he sits through those. The smile you see on his face now is what you see all the time. He goes to Citizens Park. Sometimes he stays, works that midnight shift when they're cleaning up at Citizens Park. And we just couldn't have a finer non-paid employee, I think, as Roger phrased it in his notes. So we're honored to recognize McDaniel Parker.
We have another award for McDaniel as well. We call it In the Spirit of True Character. And let me read it. Whereas McDaniel Parker has volunteered regularly for 9 years with Parks, Recreation, and Tourism Department of the City of Aiken, whereas he helped in many different ways for cleaning recreational grounds and facilities, for setting up for weekend athletic tournaments, to working with Christmas at Hopeland's light show, and more. Whereas he has done so unselfishly with a can-do attitude and a willingness to serve his community in any way, whereas in doing so he has demonstrated positive character qualities such as patience, endurance, diligence, enthusiasm, generosity, availability, determination, and joyfulness. See that joy, McDaniel. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City of Aiken, South Carolina, recognizes McDaniel Parker as a citizen of character in the City of Aiken. McDaniel.
All I can say is thank you, and this, believe it or not, this award really does mean a lot to me, more than you all may believe. Thank you for the opportunity to come in and volunteer, work, and hang out with my brother, my best friend. Thank you very much.
McDaniel, if you have any other friends like that to do that, we'd be happy to meet them also. Thank you so much, both of you. Thank you. Next order of business is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have three appointments before you tonight. Councilman Ebner would like to appoint Marion Nafee to the Park Commission to replace Kay Bodenheimer, who has resigned. Councilmember Homoki would like to recommend Margaret Marion to be appointed to the Park Commission to replace Catherine Shirley, who has resigned. And he would also like to reappoint Dacre Stoker to the Environmental Committee. And those are the three appointments before you tonight.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Very good. Now, does anyone have any nominations for the agenda next week on some of the other appointments? If not, that's fine. Okay. Thank you. Under new business, the first reading of an ordinance to convey property along the closed Ligon Street right-of-way. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by its title. It's an ordinance approving the execution of conveyance of the unopened and permanently closed street known as Ligon Avenue Extension and Jasper Street to the abutting property owners. Typically, in the past, when we've had a paper street closed, a lot of times we'll consider splitting it between the two parties on either side. In this case, the property right along McCormick Street, if you turn to the last page in your agenda, and if you could look at the map that's on there, McCormick Street is on your left-hand side, and at your upper portion, there's a lot owned by a Miss Benton, and below that is the Ligon Avenue Extension, and right below that is your lots 25 through 32. When we originally went ahead and purchased the property at lot 32 and the properties where Miss Benton were at, we took three smaller lots and split those up into two larger lots. And actually, in the area where Ligon Street used to be at, Miss Benton has irrigation lines already running into that area. Because, again, when we subdivided those three areas, that is how we subdivided to include that portion of Ligon. The rest of the portion backs up to Pine Long Cemetery. For the last several years at least, they have come to us wanting to know if we could close Ligon Avenue so it could become part of the cemetery itself and that they could then plant material and to use this as part of the cemetery property. So we set out the ordinance that you have before us that the property would be deeded to the cemetery and to Miss Benton. However, if City Council wants, we could certainly go ahead and subdivide it between both properties. But it's written right now that it would be given to Pine Log Cemetery and would be given to Miss Benton. We did send a letter to all the adjoining property owners so that they would be aware of this tonight. I have not heard from any of them except for the individual from Pine Log Cemetery and Miss Benton. So again, if once we discuss this with those that may be present tonight, when you do go ahead and approve the first reading, please either approve it as all the property being given to the adjoining property owner to the north of this area, or that we would split the property between adjoining property owners. So for your consideration tonight, this ordinance approving the execution and conveyance of the unopened and closed portion of the street known as Ligon Street Extension and Jasper Street to the abutting property owner. Upon City Council consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second? And then we can have some discussion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we approve this on first reading and also that the property be given to the property owners north of Ligon Avenue.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll wait for comment because I wanted to make a comment before, yeah. And it's not comment time in terms
okay.
of...
Okay. I'll second the motion okay. And then go ahead, Leslie.
I've spoken with the property owner in addition to the cemetery individuals, and I think that Mr. Holland, I don't know whether to can we allow him a public comment at this time?
Oh, certainly.
Hallie is the president of the cemetery committee, and if we would allow him to make a statement this time, I would like that, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Sir. Mayor, yes, Council, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the City Council and the City of Aiken for the support that you have given to Pine Lawn Cemetery. Councilwoman Price and Councilwoman Clyburn and the Mayor have been especially helpful to us. Thanks to the leadership of Councilwoman Clyburn with the Aiken Visionaries, our efforts to clean up, maintain, and improve Pine Lawn Cemetery were started. Councilwoman Price, the cemetery is in your district, and thank you for your support. thanks to the city for your allocation of funds to the cemetery that allowed for the outstanding fence that we have around the cemetery today. When it was voted on by the council, the vote was unanimous. So thanks to you and your former members who participated in that vote. We come to you tonight asking for your help and support again. The Pine Lawn Cemetery Board would like to gain ownership of Tract B. It is adjacent to the cemetery. The land has not been used for its intended purpose for many decades. The area is densely populated with trees. There are oaks, magnolias, Carolina cherries, and catalpa trees of various sizes. A few of the oaks are 4 to 5 feet in girth. For years, many people cleaning grave sites and family plots have thrown their trash, rubbish, and debris into this area. Also, others have used this area to deposit trash and rubbish. Just before Thanksgiving, I removed a sofa, a large overstuffed chair, and a treadmill that someone had recently left in the area. If we are given this tract of land, we will keep it clean. We will move our fence line to enclose this area. We will not cut any specimen trees, and we will use the area as a natural buffer to the cemetery. We will not clear the land for additional grave sites. We will use this area to help improve the appearance of the perimeter of the cemetery, hence improving the overall appearance of the cemetery, North Aiken, and the city of Aiken. So if we are given this tract of land, it's 0.2925 acres, we will be good stewards of it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Holland, would you just give us your address, please, for the record, too, your name?
328 Newberry Street, Northwest, Aiken, James Halley Holland.
Thank you, sir. Now, any questions of Mr. Holland while he's here?
Let me add, with Mr. Holland's presence, is that I've spoken with Mr. Holland and another member of the cemetery committee, in addition to the owner of Track A, who indicated that she has no objections to propose recommendation as Mr. Holland is proposing, or giving all of the track to the cemetery. It is whatever the wishes is of council that she will go along with.
Okay.
As proposed in the paperwork that the city manager read, that is just fine with me. Track B, it's adjacent. Also, it would work with our fence line without buying any additional fencing. And plus, that house is a nice house, and I would hate to try to do anything that would ruin that beautiful yard she has. She has the grass, and as it was said, she has irrigation in place, so the recommendation is fine, super okay. Fantastic with us.
Okay, that calls for an amendment to a motion, does it?
No.
Okay, so you're agreeing with the original?
Yes.
Motion, okay.
Yes.
Can I have clarification of what the motion is? There's two ordinances. Can I assume, based on the conversation, that your motion refers to the ordinance that gives the property to Georgia Bend and Pine Log Cemetery? Is that the ordinance that you move to approve?
That is, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Holland. If there's anyone else who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Pierce is pointing.
Did someone have a comment? Larry?
Some additional information for Council, Mr. Mayor. Okay. When we were surveying for the fence over in that area, of course, there, as Mr. Holland indicated, there was a lot of trash and other material in there, so we couldn't do a real good survey. We did find some graves outside the edge of the fence over along the Florence Street right-of-way. There is a good possibility, from the way that we were seeing how the graves were laid out, there could be some graves on this. I cannot say that positively, but we do know that there were some over outside the fenced area on Florence. They're unmarked. The way we found them basically was just through the sunken places in the ground that we were able to observe. Again, with the trash in this area, we can't confirm that, but I did want council to know that there is a possibility of that.
Well, perhaps I think an attorney is maybe talking about that subject back there with someone. But we'll certainly have to, if that's the case, then of course that couldn't be in a part of this piece of property that's being transferred, could it? Is that what you're saying?
Basically, let me just clarify this, because I know we have two new council members that have not been involved in an issue like this before. But within our city, when it was originally platted, there were a lot of what we call paper streets that were platted but never opened up and used as a roadway. This is one of those situations. There's a possibility, and we don't know this for a fact, that, as Mr. Moore stated, that some of the grave sites could have been encroaching into this paper street. If you go ahead and approve the ordinance as was stated tonight, track A would go to Miss Benton, which I stated before, when we originally looked at those lots that were in that area, we subdivided her lot that would include Ligon to give her a larger lot. And then track B would be given to the cemetery. So if there were some grave sites that possibly were in this paper street, it would then be on their property, as conveyed by the city. But we went down to the courthouse and spent numerous months making sure that no one laid claim to this paper street, and mm-hmm. went through all the legalities to declare that it was the city's, and then the city could again give it up and to move forward with it in this manner as being proposed tonight.
Correct. What, Mr. LeDuc, what would there be a possibility of some grave sites in Track A?
To our knowledge, there is not, and I say that because when you look at the fence lines that were out there, there was a fence line along the western side, or the area that backed up to Miss Benton's property. The other side was a little bit more undefined between those properties and where the cemetery was at.
Can we move forward with the current recommendation for approval, and after, would 2 weeks be long enough for you to investigate this thoroughly to ensure that we are not placing grave sites on someone's property in terms of
deed? With the property now being cleaned up, we'll be glad to go out there and look and see if we see any evidence at all.
Okay.
But if you move forth the ordinance as proposed, if there were that possibility, they would then be on the Pine Lawn Cemetery land.
Okay.
Okay. Which would be present no problem.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Larry, very much. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussions? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to revise plan, residential concept plan for the village at Woodside. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'm going to read this by its title. It's an ordinance amending the contract plan for property located in Woodside Plantation. In 2001, when the third phase of Woodside was presented to the city of Aiken, the original proposal included a 100-foot buffer of along Silver Bluff Road, north and south of the entrance into the village. The city, after looking at possible well sites in and along Silver Bluff Road, we had looked at several locations. One was at the substation, or the fire substation area, which was our original proposal, and we presented that to council last about 15 months ago, and the decision was not to put it at that location. We then looked at a vacant piece of property just south of the substation. There's a couple of trailers there and an abandoned home. The price for that property was about three times higher than the property that we are proposing to you tonight. But before we could buy that property and present that to you, we would need to have that concept plan change, because the concept plan with the 100-foot buffer would not allow anything to be built in there. We are proposing tonight to go ahead and change that concept plan that would then allow a well site and a facility that would go ahead and treat the water and then have a tank there. This water would be then transported to a water line along Silver Bluff Road that is currently at that location, and then a line that would go back in towards the reserve at the Woodside area, and would certainly help with some of the pressure and flow problems that we are currently having on the southwest portion of the city of Aiken. The site that we're proposing would be purchased from Woodside if you so approve. This would come back to you after your second reading. We would then be coming to council with a resolution asking for the sale and purchase, or the purchase of the price that's being sold by Woodside. We would go ahead and construct the treatment facility, so it would be a hip roof that would look similar to a home. There would be a 50-foot buffer around the property. The well site would not be visited except for once a day by utility personnel, so it's not a location where there's going to be a lot of activity or vehicles going in and out of that area. So tonight, what we'd like to propose to you for first reading of an ordinance to revise the concept plan at the village at Woodside to allow a water tank and treatment facility for the city of Aiken, and upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we approve this ordinance to revise the concept plan at the village of Woodside to allow a water tank and treatment facility for the city of Aiken.
Okay. Have a second? Okay. Any discussion? By council. Okay. In the audience, anyone want to speak on this issue? You may do so. If not, it's back to city council for consideration.
If I could make one additional comment, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
The contract proposal that you'll be receiving next week, part of this land that we're going to be purchasing, it has a purchase price of $185,000. We'll have a clause in it that will allow Woodside to buy back a certain portion of that for a potential detention pond that would be needed in that area. And it's basically, we will have a price in there on a square foot basis of what we're paying for, and there's a reversal clause that allow them to buy this property back at some time in the future should they desire to do that. So again, after your second reading, then you'll have a resolution with the land sale next meeting.
Okay, very good. Okay, show of hands please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance to rezone Helping Hands to Plan Institutional. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'm going to read this by its title. It's an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate located at 100 John Elliott Lane from limited professional to planned institutional, and to approve a concept plan. Helping Hands has been around for a number of decades, and they moved to this current location about 21 years ago. It's a 24-hour residential care facility for younger children and youth in our area, and has provided a greatly needed service to our community. I'll just put it, unfortunately, they have to grow, and that's, in most cases, you would say that's a good thing, but you know, in this case, they do need to grow, and they need to put a new building up there, which would be about 5,000 square feet. According to the zoning that we have currently at that location, as limited professional, you cannot construct a building of that size. Now, in 1999, when the zoning ordinance was first revised, everything in that area was zoned professional. But council, when they provided for the new zoning ordinance, everything that was professional went to limited professional, except for a few particular areas where the county building was at. We instituted, I want to say just a couple of years ago, a new zoning category called institutional, which is where they would like to use right now. The Planning Commission met at their December meeting. They voted unanimously for this change from limited professional to planned institutional. The concept plan and everything that they would like to place there meets with our staff's recommendation as far as the size of the building, the amount of acreage that would have to be for open space. Everything is fine, and all they need today from you is to approve the zoning change and at the same time approve the concept plan that is within your agenda package. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to rezone property for the Helping Hands Incorporated from limited professional to planned institutional. And if you do so, then at the next meeting, we'll have second reading and a public hearing.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve a first reading and ordinance amending the zoning of real estate located at 100 John Elliott Lane from limited professional to planned institutional and to approve a concept plan.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Very good. Second. Okay. Any discussion?
I just want to say that this is to Ms. Landy in the audience, and as I read this, I thought about John Elliott, who gave so much to get this established, and certainly you're doing a tremendous ministry, I should say, because what you're doing is a ministry for a lot of children in our community. So this is needed, and I support it wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, any thoughts from the audience? Anybody wants to speak? Okay, certainly.
Do you think I left the chance
passed up? No, I didn't think you would.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, and to the council persons here today. Carmen Landy from Helping Hands. I'm the executive director. And I just want to thank you so much for all of the support that you've given us over the years. Helping Hands has been in the city of Aiken for more than 35 years. We opened in 1973, and the city of Aiken has always supported us. And so I want to thank you publicly for your support for our agency. And just to give you a little bit about why we're making this expansion. Of course, as Mr. LaDuke said, unfortunately, we do have to grow. But we want to grow in a positive way. So this space that we're looking at creating for our young people from birth to 21 is really going to be a space of growth, especially for our older children, to help them gain independent skills. Right now, Helping Hands has 4 young people in college enrolled and living with us. We have graduated several young people from high school and through GED programs over the past 5 years. We've housed more than 400 children in the 5 years that I've been there. And a lot of it has been very, very positive, and we want to have a positive impact on our children. A lot of the young people that are graduating are from outside of this county, but they are making roots in Aiken County, in the city of Aiken. And so they are taxpaying citizens. We're making sure of it. We're making sure that they're productive citizens in our community and that they're a welcome addition. The people from Pine Lawn were here. Our children are in the community volunteering on a weekly basis, and we've done cleanup at Pine Lawn Cemetery. We do Meals on Wheels. We serve meals at the churches in their soup kitchens because we want our children to contribute to this community and show you just how grateful we are to be here. So I want to thank you so much, and I didn't want to let the opportunity pass without giving you my heartfelt thanks for allowing us to be here and supporting us so much.
Thank you so much for what you and your staff are doing there. I might say volunteers too, because I know you have a lot of volunteers. Mm-hmm. Couldn't do without the volunteers either. Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 4 is the first reading of an ordinance to remove property from the historic district. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by its title. It's an ordinance to remove 751 Highland Park Drive from the historic overlay district. The owner of this property, which they purchased in 1999, would like to be removed from the historic district. The property behind is a major contributing factor in this, and it's very significant to this property being the golf course. The properties across the street and towards town on Highland Park Drive are also in. This is the last remaining house that is in the district. Supposedly, they would like to go ahead and be removed because of some of the work that they would like to have done on their particular home. To our knowledge, this is the first home that would be removed. There has been some other properties removed in the past. Johnson Drugstore, which was at the northeast corner of Park and Fairfield, was removed at one time. Number 10 Down Street had a couple of buildings removed, although the grounds themselves stayed within the historic district. And recently, St. Mary's Church, not St. Clair's Chapel, and the land was removed from the district. So those are the few that we've had. Each one of those was not contiguous to other properties in the historic district, but were separated and further away of what they would consider more of a contributing factor. The Planning Commission voted on a 4-3 vote to approve this. The Design Review Board unanimously denied a request. But the process is, the request is made, first of all, to the Design Review Board. Once they hear it, it then goes to the Planning Commission. And then once the Planning Commission votes on it, then it comes to City Council. And City Council has the final say after the first and second reading whether or not a property would be removed. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to remove the property at 751 Highland Park Drive from the Historic Overlay District. And upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second on this so that we can have discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we deny on first reading an ordinance to remove 751 Highland Park Drive from the Historic Overlay District.
Okay. Do we have a second for that? I will second that.
Steve did.
Did you, Steve? I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Any discussion by council right now, or we will see also if the audience, anyone in the audience would like to speak. Yes, go ahead. Just give us your name and address, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, City Council persons. My name is Joy Fogarty, and I'm the owner of the property at 751 Highland Park Drive. I am asking for it to be removed from the historic district for reasons that it meets absolutely none of the criteria on the designation. It's a 1951 ranch. I'm the last house on the street, and I wouldn't even ask if it wasn't the very last house. Everything that I do on this house, which requires many, many things when you're talking about a 1950 ranch house, has to be presented before the Design Review Committee. It's very difficult to get workers to work on the house without submitting applications. I'm not planning on doing any major renovations. I'm just wanting to do minimal amount of work without getting permits and just to repair things that need to be done. Right now I have rotting posts on the front of the house. It's not like you can go down to the store and buy posts that were put in 1951. You have to get something different. And that's one of the reasons that I'm coming before you. Are there any questions for me? I'd love to present my case even more. As I understood it, for designation, the removal of a property was just the reverse of designation. The only thing that meets the criteria is that the house was put into the historic register in 1984. It wasn't put in into the overlay district until 1990. I moved into the house in 1997, not 1999. So we've been there a substantial amount of time.
Mm-hmm. George, let me make a couple of comments. I go by your home every day, at least twice, because I live that out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I like your home.
Thank you. I've done a lot of work on it.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. And the way it sits and everything else, I like it.
You indicated you're the last house on the block.
Yes, sir.
Now, Pine Knoll is next to you, is it not?
Going the other way, so Dr. Lee's house on the opposite direction is not in.
So coming this way, though, you pass Pine Knoll.
Yes.
And then you go by your house eventually.
Right, coming from town over to
my
house, yes.
Right, right.
Yes.
So is it really the last house that's in the district?
On that side of the street, yes.
Well, on that side of the street, but not in the district, though. Anyway, that's beside the point as far as I'm concerned. I think we've got, you know, you mentioned that you've done some work on your home, and I know you have, and you've never had anybody, you've never gone before the board, anything like that before.
Years past, the boards were not the way they are now. And being ignorant years ago when we first moved in, to be honest with you, we just did the work. I mean, looking back on it now, for example, the house across street who has changed owners twice, they put second floor, dormers, there's never been a permit, there's never been a sign out front. So things have evolved over the years where the boards are more active now, city council's more involved, design committee now is why I'm coming forward. Mm-hmm. Years ago, we didn't think about it.
Well, I think what's happened, and I don't know the details, but just from what you say, someone didn't do the job. If they were in the districts, they should have come before the board. Now, I don't know where it slipped or how it slipped, but I hope that's certainly a wake-up call for us in the city to make sure. I've got a real problem when it comes to taking something out. As Mr. LeDuc had said, and our planning director indicates also as well, he did some research, and this has not been done before. And I think it's a bad policy if we start to do this for various reasons, with people deciding all of a sudden that they just don't want to be in the historic district that they've been in for years or even months or whatever. Right. I think we all have an obligation when we move anywhere to understand where we're moving to and all the parameters of that. We've heard this old saying, you know, buyer beware and all that kind of thing, but I think it's very true. We all need to be aware of where we're moving. And I'll just be very frank, I'm not in favor of taking your home or anyone else's home out of a district. And I can't think of a reason why I would ever change my mind. Once you're in a district and you know you're in a district, or you should, a person should, once we start this, can you understand what could happen?
Absolutely, and I completely understand, but I feel that taking my house out of the historic district can only benefit that neighborhood. It can only benefit my neighbors, because right now, things that I would like to do, just simple things, not saying that somebody eventually isn't going to buy my house years down the line and do some fabulous things that I can't afford to do, but driving by it every day, Mr. Mayor, you've seen subtle changes. Those changes can just benefit the neighborhood if I'm free to just do it.
Well, why don't you think you would be free to do it now? You indicate in what I've read that, oh, it's a bother, you know, and you got to go to the boards and go through the forms and that kind of thing. Well, everyone does that happens to be in a district, in a historic district. And it's an honor, I think, to be in a district. I'm not in one, but I wouldn't mind being in a district. But you haven't done it, unless I'm mistaken.
Because, again, years ago, ignorance, whatever, we just didn't even know to do it. Nor did anyone on the street do it. Mm-hmm. Things have changed, and it's really for our benefit. Mm-hmm. But I still really feel that it would be a benefit for a 1950s house to be out of the district. And another reason is, if it was a historic house, I would welcome the design board giving me ideas and direction on how to change my house to fit the period. However, it's a 1950s house.
Well, and there are I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's okay. But it is a 1950s house, and I just don't know if their direction is more than what I can contribute as far as what I can do to a 1950s house. It's not like running down to the store to buy a post that you can replicate from 1950. You have to do something different. And there's so many things. When I get, for example, window companies coming out, they won't give me vinyl windows that are less expensive. I have to get wood frame windows that are way more expensive. The price differential is way more, it's way different. Those are the things I'm looking at.
Do you think this adds to the value of your home?
I believe it does. And it benefits me with my monthly electric bill for sure.
Yeah.
I have drafty old windows. They're not historic old windows. They're just 50s old windows.
Well, if I may, and then I'll be quiet, give you a personal experience. Okay. When we moved to Aiken in 1953, our folks built a home on Brandy Road. And very often when I'm in the South Side, I'll go down Brandy Road just to see where we used to live as a teenager. And that house looks better all the time I go by there. It's not in the district. Not in the district. But the point is, I think you could do the same thing being in the district. That my folks bought that house for $16,000 in 1953. It was recently shown in one of the real estate magazines for sale for $179,000. And there have been a few things added, of course, a room here and a room there, but it's still a relatively small house. But that house looks nice, and Brandy Road looks nice, and all those homes were built in the early 50s down there. So I don't have a problem personally with an old house. I think they can be made to look beautiful. And I think, as I said earlier, your setting that you're in down there is a lovely setting.
I love my lot, and I love what the house could be. And I agree with you completely, but that house you're referring to on Brandy is outside of the historic district, so you could just wing it and just go do it.
But it's worthwhile. It's not an old 50-something house that you just, you throw away.
Well, I'm not saying throw it away. Believe me, I'm not saying throw it away. I'm talking about minimal, small changes, but many, many, many of them.
But you haven't tried. You haven't been before the board.
Joy, excuse me, Mr. Mayor. As I listen to you, I'm trying to figure out how can we help you. And I'm wondering about your list of things you want to do, submitting that, and seeing if that works first. What I hear from folks that have to go before the Design and Review Committee is that, one, the city is a bunch of bureaucrats. It's very costly to do these kinds of repairs. Some people cannot afford to do these kinds of repairs. But I think you've got a body that is open-minded, can understand, and will work with you. And the thing right now is to submit what you have. Let's try this first and see if that works.
It's going to be a constant list, constant submitting for little things. I'll start with my posts that are out in front of my house that are just dangling from the cement on the bottom. It's completely eaten up about, I don't know, 5 inches. I can't just run down the street and get new posts. I have to submit and get approval on what they think I should have.
Well, Ms. Fogarty, if I might, I made the motion, and I did so based on the fact that the Design Review Board recommended disapproval. The Planning Commission vote was 4-3, and it's worthy of note that the three no votes were the most experienced planners, members of the Planning Commission, all of whom live within the district. I think you might get a little more, you would have had more support had you made the effort to go through the process and then come back to us and say, listen, I tried, and these folks are unreasonable because of this and that and so forth. The goal of the historic concept is preservation, and there are probably lots of 1950 houses in the districts that we have that are getting along fine with the process. And yes, it can be unwieldy, but I wish you'd give it a shot before you just give up and come in and want to be taken out of the district. But I understand where you're coming from.
And as I said, if I was anywhere but the very last house going away from town, I wouldn't even ask.
But you're still adjacent and in the vicinity of some very important properties in the historic district.
Just the Pine Knoll. Okay. Just Pine Knoll.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Were you going to?
Jane Page Thompson, 240 Knox Avenue, Aiken, South Carolina, 29801. I am also the last house in the historic district. I'm a part owner in one of the last commercial properties in the downtown overlay district. I urge you to deny this request because the precedent it would set would be catastrophic to the inherent mission of both the historic overlay districts and the downtown overlay district and the Old Aiken overlay district and the other horse overlay districts and all those wonderful districts we have to maintain Aiken's character. Being in a new house, my house was only built in 1990, I understand how it can be a little frustrating. However, the administrative approval process for minor items like fence posts, fence gates, the sconces on the back of my house, our house is under purview 365 degrees around it because of the carriageway behind our house as well. So I understand some of the problems. I find that a duty I'd pay as a citizen to live in a town where I have such a great character around me with the plantings and the historic buildings and the great job that the City of Aiken does to preserve that character in other areas. Sometimes it's a little bit of a hindrance, but what I have found in numerous applications before the Design Review Board is that they are logical, they're fair, and in most cases, they actually point out a way for me to come up with a better plan and a better project and actually, on one occasion, save me money. That was the only one. But it is a an integral part of Aiken. And your next agenda item, or the one after that, you're going to hear a lot from me because of that location of my property again. And there's no arguing, it's a bit of a burden, but it's a burden you gladly bear to live in such a great town with such wonderful character and such wonderful services and the privileges we have. So I urge you to vote to deny this request. And not only because of that, but also send the message that buying property, buyer beware, Mayor, you said it, and thank you for saying that. Realtors, real estate salespeople do a very good job trying to tell homeowners what districts they fall in, what the regulations and zoning ordinances are going to be that they are going to have to adhere to. And we have a lot of just do it and ask for forgiveness later going on in town. So I'd like to see that sort of be curtailed. And if you can send a loud message with this that we do have these processes and we'd like you to do them in the front end rather than the back end, that would be great. Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak?
I'd like to, Mr. Mayor, ask Mr. Evans a question if no one else is.
Certainly. Sure, go ahead while Mr. Joby's coming up.
Well, Mr. Evans would need to come forward to respond to that. My question is in reference to Design and Review Board and the windows. Are they restricted to just wooden windows, as far as you know?
No, the board has approved vinyl windows on, I can't tell you how many occasions, but more than a few. I can't say what they would do for Ms. Fogarty's property, but they certainly, there's not an automatic requirement for wood windows.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Ed Giobi. I live at 541 Grace Avenue Southeast in Aiken, and I wanted to respond to Ms. Fogarty. I am sympathetic to her plight, but I would like to point out to Council that I have now been involved in three different structures in the historic district over a period of a number of years, a house, a cottage, and built a six-stall horse barn. I have had absolutely no difficulty whatsoever. I have found the Design Review Board to be more than sympathetic, helpful, has been pointed out very often, will point out ways to even save you money. But I think it's important to that council should understand, as Mr. Evans just pointed out, that some of the requirements that may have been in effect many, many years ago, such as requiring wood windows, I had the experience just recently of when originally renovating our house, I was required to replace some old casement windows with wood windows. They became difficult to operate after a number of years, and last year I applied was given administrative approval to replace them with vinyl clad windows, which are totally indistinguishable from wooden windows. So the assertion that there is no ability to replace wooden windows with vinyl windows is not accurate. Same thing with a cottage, same thing with our barn. We've had numerous occasions to obtain administrative approval. It's a very easy process, and I certainly would encourage Ms. Fogarty to go through the process. I don't think it'll be that difficult, and for the minor things that she's talking about, it should be actually quite easy. I must reject her assertion that she is the last house on the road, and therefore this has no merit as far as its historical designation is concerned. If we were to apply that logic to the entire historic district, there would be what is the difference between the first house and the last house? We could go down most roads in Aiken, and I would point out that you could go down South Boundary, and many of the houses on South Boundary, which is one of the most photographed and considered to be historic roads in Aiken, many of those houses are 1950s ranches. There have been arguments that I've heard before this group that the 1950s ranch houses actually do have some historical significance. And those of you who did work at SRS know that many of those houses were built for SRS employees. So there is some history. But I think the real nub of this argument is that it is a bad precedent to allow anyone to opt out of the historic district after having bought a house in the historic district, knowing that the house was located in that district. What will happen is that there will be others, if you allow this, there's no question that at some point will come forward and ask to be able to do the same thing. It will wind up destroying the fabric of our historic district. That would not be good for the community. It would not be good for the city of Aiken. And therefore, I heartily believe and strongly urge you to reject it. I find it very, very difficult to believe that she can't get any contractors to come to the house. I can't get rid of them. That's number one. And number two, under the present economic conditions, I can't imagine that there aren't people willing to do work. Also, not having actually tried to go through the process, I think she's grossly underestimating the ease in which the process can take place. So, Ms. Fogarty, I would hope that you would at least try to work with Design Review. I think you'll find them very easy to work with. They're really very nice people. And I think it'll be a much more rewarding and very much more pleasant experience. And I think you'll be able to get what you want done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Jeff.
I'm Jack Beckham, 188 Governor's Lane, and I'm sure that the Historical Society has got good intentions, but sometimes they are referred to around here as the Hysterical Society. Everybody wants a nice place to live. And I love to ride through the historical district. I like to go through the horse district, and it's a very beautiful area. But when do we get to the point where we have give a person the freedom to do as they like with their property. Now, this lady pays taxes, I'm sure, and I don't really see why we have to be so stringent on our regulations when the whole, if you put the restrictions on all the areas of Aiken, it might be some other areas we might need to do that too, you know. I know we want to preserve his history, but when a 1950 house, a 1960 house, is that preserving history? I have a little problem with that. And the boundaries, if it's the last house, why couldn't you move the boundaries in a little bit? I don't see where that's the problem, but maybe I don't understand. But I have a real problem when we get to the point where government has too much control. And this is just another example. It seemed like that we're just gradually losing our freedom, and we don't trust the individual to make the right decision. I just have a problem with that. I know it's a good idea, but sometimes good ideas can get overblown. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ed Evans. Ed, if you could, it might help. We've talked a lot about administratively approvals on some of the things that the homeowners can get just by administrative, not having to go through this. It might help, Joy, to understand what some of these things are. It would help me too. I know some of them, but it might help you. It might help us all of us. Could you review, at least, if you don't have your notes there, what you remember? You've got a good memory.
If you're building a new house, or if you're making major changes to a house, ripping off a part of the house, that kind of thing has to go to the board. If you're changing the shingles, if you're changing shutters, if you're changing
boards,
siding, anything that's a maintenance or repair, where you're taking the building back to, you're not really changing the appearance, you're just changing the material, basically.
Right.
That doesn't even require a certificate, does not require approval. But if you're putting up a fence, say a new fence, that can be administratively approved. If you're putting in a swimming pool, that can be administratively approved. Anything other than major things, and I won't get into defining that, is potentially administratively approvable.
Okay. Well, how about a couple of things you mentioned, the post out front?
The rotting wood.
Yeah, if that was just taking the fence or the post back.
Well, it's on the porch, I imagine, isn't it? Are you talking about your front posts that's holding up part of your roof?
There's three posts.
All right, okay.
if you're putting the post back exactly the way it looks now, you're not changing the appearance, that does not require approval at all. That's just no certificate. If she was going to change from a square post to a round post, that would require a certificate, but most likely could be administratively approved. The vinyl windows probably would have to go to the board. My guess is that they would probably approve that because the house is not a contributing house, not an important historic house. So it's hard to get into detail, but generally we've had, I counted up today, in the last 5 years, we've had 814 applications, and almost 48% of those were administratively approved. In the last 2 years, over 54% have been administratively approved. So the percentage is actually going up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, again, at least half of the applications are administratively approved.
Right. Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks. Okay. Any other comments? Anyone?
Mr. Fogarty has another.
May I say something else?
Certainly.
And I'm thinking about biting my tongue before I get there.
Okay. That's okay.
I'm trying to be very respectful.
being in the historic district, I can really understand where you're all coming from, and you're wanting us to stay a certain way. But there's other areas in this town that I think more attention should be paid to, rather than, let me try to say this differently. Okay. There's other areas and other homes not far in other areas that I think deserve more of the attention of the committees rather than my house, who could use some work, but it's not as bad as some other houses. I'll give you an example. If you go down Newbury Street Northwest, where I have a rental property, I look right across the street. I see two houses that truly look like they're from a third world country. So I'm not sure where the balance is on some of the houses and submitting applications for rotting posts and other houses that are literally falling down, unoccupied, termite-infested houses that should be bulldozed. I have that property at Newbury Street for sale. With neighbors like that, I don't think I'll ever get rid of it. So I had to get that off my chest. I probably should have bit my tongue when I had the opportunity.
No, you shouldn't either. And it leads into something that we're doing in the city. And Mr. LaDuke could tell you, if we wanted to spend another 30 minutes here, just how many houses we have renovated and helped others to renovate, and have churches working with us and developers working with us. Council, about 4 years ago or so, Roger, correct me if I'm wrong, we agreed on council that over the next 10 years we wanted to renovate or build new, mm-hmm. buy lots, whatever we had to do, mm-hmm. to have 500, let's say, good, nice homes. Mm-hmm. There were some of them were empty lots, and the city's bought a number of empty lots. And then we are contracting out for people to, you know, contractors to build the homes. Mm-hmm. And then we're selling them, and we're getting our money back. Tool Hill, we bought two blocks here 4 or 5 years ago, built 40 homes or so, Roger? 50 homes there. They're all built now.
Right.
And how many of them are filled?
All
of them. 50 homes. That used to be one of our worst, if not worst, crime zones.
Right.
We can ask public safety about that.
Right.
And we're moving moving every place that it needs it, no matter where the houses are, if we have an opportunity to buy a lot.
Right.
Crossland Park is a major, major project that we have going now. How many homes have we bought out there? 100 homes have been bought. We're going to be fixing them up and making that area nice.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So we're doing as much as we can. And as you know, a lot of folks, especially a lot of the horse community, mm-hmm. have come down, bought homes,
right.
like some of them that you're talking about, and fixing them up. So that's not saying we don't have challenges. We do.
Right. And if the city has any extra spare pocket change, if you can start on Newbury Street Northwest, that would be greatly appreciated.
And what's the address there? No, we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So anyway.
Yeah, we have also torn down over 300 homes in the last probably 5 or 6 years. So, I mean, we mm-hmm. we had a tremendous challenge, a number of homes that were in poor shape.
Right.
If you could, Richard Pierce back there, who is sitting right behind you, if you give him the address of where your home is on Newbury Street.
434 Newbury Street Northwest.
We'll take a look at the homes across the street.
Two across the street. Look like they're in Jamaica.
Okay.
So. And one other point that I would like to make regarding vinyl windows. We discussed vinyl windows during the design board's meeting, and that was not the same answer I got. So I'm not sure what the answer is tonight. Can we have vinyl windows or no vinyl windows?
I think you had said that was iffy on vinyl.
It's iffy?
So what did you say?
There's a huge difference in money between wood and vinyl, and I understand the gentleman on Gray Street that talked about it, but that was not what we talked about during the design committee. So,
can you address that?
Yes. Ma'am, did you want
did
me to...
Did you hear what Ms. Fogarty said?
I did before.
You're not asking for a decision.
No decision, but there seemed to be a misunderstanding from what you had, Joy.
Did you talk to the board in a work session?
We discussed it during the session, and I understood that I could not have vinyl windows. I had Enlow come out, and that was my understanding that I could not have vinyl windows.
I mean, if they told her in a work session that they didn't think she could have vinyl windows, then I'm not going to argue with that.
Okay.
I mean, if they've said you can't have vinyl windows and that's their decision, I wasn't aware that that was the case. But
there has to be a formal submittal to really get a decision.
I didn't think had occurred. I didn't think there had been a formal application for anything.
Right. Okay.
And again, they have approved vinyl windows in more than a few cases, so it would not be usual.
They have approved vinyl windows in some cases.
They have.
Okay. So. It's another reason, I guess, to submit the forms and try. Okay, anything else? Any other discussion?
I want to, before the vote, ask Ms. Rogatry if she would submit the application, try the process. If the process doesn't work, if there are problems, if you see that there are ways that we can improve, let us know. Come back to council and let us know. We don't say that we've got a perfect set up in terms of going through all the process of trying to get an approval. So come back and make recommendations for improvement. We're open and we'll receive those in good favor.
Let me make one comment to council. About 3 years ago, we started surveying individuals because we had heard complaints about the various major boards, which would be the Planning Commission, Board of Zoning Appeal, and the Design Review Board, about the fact that it was a very difficult process and the people that were on the boards were very difficult to work with and a number of different issues. So we started surveying individuals who had gone before the various boards and commissions to just, they could write down whatever they wanted to and rate us from one being the best, five to being the worst, looking at staff, looking at the process, looking at everything. And Planning Commission, Design Review Board have consistently received some very, very high marks. And, you know, people don't like to go before the boards, and they would prefer not to, but they have gotten very high marks in just about, I'd say, 99% of the cases. Board of Zoning Appeals, people feel a little bit differently because a lot of times you either win or you lose before the Board of Zoning Appeals. And the process is a little bit more difficult because we have to follow certain regulations and laws within that. But I will have to say that with the Design Review Board, generally most of the individuals, once they go through it, find it to be maybe not a pleasant opportunity, but find it to be a very fair in the board or the commission to work very much with you in almost every case. But again, we're open to hearing criticism and open to working with individuals. We have heard concerns in the past, and this is why Ed has worked very hard to get the number of administratively approved where you don't even have to go before the board. He receives the plans, he looks at the work, reviews it, he feels it's okay to be done without going before the board. He gets the chairman to review it also, and between the two of them they could sign off on it. And as he stated, over 50% of the cases never even have to go before the board and are administratively approved. And we'd like to see that get higher in the future, but again, major renovations need to still go before them. But again, as Ms. Price stated, I think if you give the commission a chance, in most cases they'll work quite well with you, as we found, at least from the surveys.
Okay, thank you, sir. We have a motion and a second now for denial of this request. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Thank you for your time and all the comments, and I think won't have much of a problem going through the board. Item 5, resolution approving the deed of dedication and land and storm sewer easement at Whitney Polo Field. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is a resolution. It's a little different than most resolutions that we have for a deed of dedication. And in most cases, we know exactly where the lines are going to be at and where the construction is going to take place. In this particular case, this deed of dedication is for a storm drainage pond and a line that's going to be going from this pond on the Whitney Polo Fields to a storm drainage area at Mead and Two Notch Road. Until we go ahead and actually locate the line in the field and until we build the pond, I can't tell you if the pond's going to be we have tentatively located on a map here on property that the Whitney Trust state they own here. How this came about is Jane Page Thompson called me a couple of years ago and stated that there are some major drainage problems out there, and I asked her, well, what do you mean by that? She said, well, you've got these boards from the polo field that are floating in my backyard. There is so much flooding out there. And we knew there was some flooding taking place and some problems taking place, but until she had mentioned to me, I had not realized to the extent of what we had out there. So for the last couple of years, we've been working with the Whitney Trust folks, did an extensive amount of surveying, found out that probably in the 1930s, maybe 1920s, there was some pretty good ditches out there, a lot less trees were out there, and the water was able to drain off fairly well. Well, about 15 years ago, the Whitney Trust decided to sell off some property along Knox Avenue, and I believe there's 1, 2, 3, 4 lots that are along there and homes that are now built in that area. So if there was flooding that took place 20 years ago or even 15 years ago, no one would have really experienced that because it was just a wooded area. But with 4 homes located in that area, when this does flood now, and it does, it is a problem. Larry has worked with the Whitney Trust people. They're agreeable to giving us land for the detention pond and giving us the easement for the pipe. What we are giving you tonight is a tentative deed of dedication with the exact deed of dedication to be determined by field survey work once the project has been completed. So we would like you tonight to review this and to give us approval for the deed of dedication and the approval to install the stormwater piping and detention pond on the Whitney Polo Field as stated in the attached resolution.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, very good. Any discussion?
I just have a thought. This the Whitney Polo Field is one of the 4 or 5 large pieces of property in a horse district that I recall being at a planning commission several months ago that we talked about that are quite important to the city in terms of ensuring that they stay as they are. And I wonder if this might not be an opportunity to just negotiate a little bit further with the Whitney Trust to somehow try to tie up this land so that it either couldn't be sold or couldn't be developed along the lines of what some in the horse district have discussed about those large pieces of property. I mean, they make Aiken Horse District what it is, and this seems to be an opportunity where we're helping the trust, and the trust can help us.
Absolutely.
Let me speak on that, if I could. There are 4 pieces of property. The training track being the largest of them all, the Whitney Polo Field, the Winter Polo Field, which is right across the street, and the Green Boundary Club. All of them are large tracks that are owned in trust or owned by a set of stockholders or by a consortium. And then there are some private landowners that are in there. We are working with the Whitney Trust folks on exactly what you're talking about to come up with hopefully some agreement on what can we do eventually to make sure there's a preservation or preserve this for equestrian activities long term. And I would agree with what you're saying, except for the fact that I don't want to get the two co mingled in here in that we have a drainage problem out there that is a liability issue. We are working with the Whitney Trust people on this piece of property that they would like to see in the future pavilions. They'd like to see the scoreboard switch. They would like to see improvements on the track, some of the areas where there's parking opened up, a number of other things that I think we could use. I'll use, and it's maybe not the best word, but use as leverage to go ahead and to be able to preserve that property. But because this is a liability issue concerning private property in and around the area, I'd rather not get that working with the other areas that we will in the future.
It might be better leverage than we'd have otherwise, though, because certainly there is a time element for this. But we have one of the property owners who I think is going to give us reviews on the subject, which I'd be most interested in hearing.
Yeah. Well, the key point is that we've had some talk and are trying to set up another meeting at the present time to talk about this.
I'd just love to do it all at
what
once.
What you're talking about, Dick. Yeah.
And, you know, 6 months to a year from now, hopefully we'll have some solutions on the other things. And, again, we could wait, but I'd hate to see additional rains that could cause even further damage in that area. It would be my only concern.
It can't rain anymore, can it?
Yeah. Well, this
has to be corrected anyway.
It's going
to
be corrected, and the two are not, they're tied together, but they're not tied together, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. If there's no other comments from anyone, we'll stop. We'll stop right there.
Jane Page Thompson, 240 Knox Avenue. For those of you who all don't know, my property line is the one parallel to the side of the proposed detention pond. Thank you for taking your time to address this tonight. And, Roger, I had no idea this was my fault. I called up at 4:30 this afternoon hysterical because I didn't realize it was on the agenda. as the Whitney Trust letter states, this is a drainage area that affects an historic and horse area. Given that component of this issue, I urge you to add some language to your approval of this project with the following three conditions. The trees have grown over a night watchman's house that has been used historically to ensure that somebody was at the training track 24 hours a day. I hope that this quaint part of the thoroughbred racing tradition in Aiken could be preserved by moving the night watchman's house to the training track office area or to the county historical museum. Secondly, many people use our lot as a way to access the public events that occur on the polo field. I request that the city put in a pedestrian path along the detention pond area to allow continued access to the soccer, music, and horse events that take place on the polo field and eliminate the burden of our liability with these trespassing situations. Thirdly, if the city is going to make the investment in correcting this terrible drainage problem, please replicate the request made to the Winthrop Trust and the Aiken Land Trust by safeguarding the future of the historic Whitney polo field and require a deed restriction on the track and polo field portion of the parcel against future subdivision of the parcel for development purposes. Their future parking plans and improvements mean that they won't have an economic impact, only an economic benefit from your plan. However, our parcel will be negatively impacted economically by your proposed drainage plan. As the closest and most affected neighbor, I'm concerned with their property values, but also want to, of course, alleviate the flooding. When I first researched the issue of drainage for the Whitney Polo Field, it ran towards Mead and Magnolia on an original plan of that site from the 1930s, with a possible pond site in the trees at the corner of Mead and Magnolia or at the corner of the carriageway in Magnolia. I realized that this would cost a great deal more to execute and that the track and the polo field would be disturbed, and of course I do not want that to occur, so I accept the less expensive option put before you tonight of putting the pond along my property line. However, I request that the City Council consider the following. First, that the fencing around the pond be wooded horse fencing or similar to a round pen fencing and not chain link, which could cause injury to a loose horse in the area. Secondly, the landscaping buffer around the pond should be mature and dense with an eye to preserving as many of the old hardwoods and pines as possible. My husband and I are willing to, within reason, help the city defer some of these landscaping costs, provided the buffer is substantial. And we would like to be included in any of the future plans for the detention pond and the landscaping. Thirdly, the water collected in the ponds needs to be in perpetual motion and not become a breeding ground for mosquitoes and a home for water moccasins, which have been known to bother us on our lot now. Lastly, for the past 3 years, a pump at the end of Knox Avenue has been a point of great a deal of attention by the city workers, and we have also spent personally with the State Department of Transportation thousands of dollars to install piping and catch basins along our frontage along Knox Avenue. I would beg you to consider using the existing proposed tree removal along the drainage ditch on the polo field, the existing catch basins and storm piping that are in place. First, before you install the detention pond, to see if maybe possibly those efforts made to attach to the existing structures would alleviate the problem before you go to the expense of the detention pond. Using the existing drainage basins would eliminate some of my concerns over the negative impact of the detention pond on our property line. My husband and I moved into this property on Knox Avenue 9 years ago and have spent a lot of time and energy an effort complying to a lot of different restrictions from the city. We have been much affected by the drainage, and I had no idea that one little comment would actually bring all this about, but thank you for considering it, and thank you for doing what you can to protect not only my property rights, my drainage, and my property value. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane Page. By the way, could you give us a copy of everything you said there? Not necessarily tonight, but give us a copy.
Yes.
give staff a copy so that we can look over that. We can't analyze all that tonight, obviously, but some of those things, and you know, we'll do what we should do.
Jane Page?
Go
ahead.
Do you have any thoughts about my comment to tie this project into the effort to have the Whitney Trust commit to making sure that this property is not sold or developed?
I know, but I'm. Is there not anybody here from the Whitney Trust?
Oh, no.
That alone surprises me just this much. I have been asking for that from them for years. When we bought the property, we maintain, as Lady Morris will tell you, from the back of my property line. Actually, I can show you on the sheet. If you look at the purple rectangle where your detention pond is going to be, our landscaping budget each year includes maintaining the yellow portion of the ditch behind our house, and our lot is to the left of the purple rectangle. Those long lines are barns at the stables. We maintain that ditch in the condition that is necessary to make the water flow better, because of course we're the most impacted at the lowest end, even though it's not our property. So 9 years ago we asked the Whitney Trust, if we're going to maintain this landscaping part for you, are you going to do anything to put an open space or a historic easement or something on this property? And at that time they were not inclined to do so, but I hope that you will use the $175,000 budget that this may take to ensure that that kind of provision is made. I don't think you're going to have any greater leverage than you do with this specific issue, because the water drainage is the biggest issue.
Could I suggest then the council that we might want to consider diverting this to a next meeting and invite the Whitney Trust representatives to attend?
Certainly can. There's no immediate
urgency to this?
No. I mean, it could delay it a month or.
I'm just talking 2 weeks. Yeah. We're going to meet in 2 weeks.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure if they'll build, we could see if they'll be available. Yeah.
And then we can analyze some things you've said, how that fits in with
She's
the
got about 18 conditions that she read off.
I only have seven. There are only seven. Three are for the greater good, four for specifically for me.
Yeah. And Dick, I think that's a good idea.
And they could be in our packet. Her conditions could be in our packet for the next meeting.
Reggie?
Yes. Yes, I had a conversation with Mr. Morris earlier today on the. Maybe Mr. Morris can define pond here, because the perception I had was not a pond, but a collection basin and pumped out. And that's we even correct. Discussed the flow rates, so.
Mr. Please. Ebner is correct. What we would have is a pumped basin. Any water that would be in it would be minimal on the bottom. The area, I have the actual 1930s plan of the polo field and track around it, and we would be trying to restore the detention structures, if you will, that were originally planned around that area. The area is very sandy. We feel we're going to take care of a lot of the problem that way. One of Ms. Thompson's recommendations was that we proceed with that first before we actually design a pond and put a pump in and go to that expense. I think that's a wise idea. By doing the clean out of the, I'll call it existing detention, even though it has grown up so severely, it's not really working well. By doing that clean out and restoring that, we may see the majority of the problem go away. I don't know, but I've got a feeling that we're going to see a definite improvement just because of the sand that's over in that area. The pond itself, as I say, would be pumped. It would be basically a square hole in the ground with the fencing around it. When I met with the Whitney Trust representatives back in the spring, we specifically discussed the fact that we did not want to take any large trees unless it was absolutely necessary. That would be one thing we were looking at, and that's another reason why we really couldn't give you an idea of exactly where the pond would be, because we'll be working with them. When I say a square hole, we may end up with a rectangle or something that looks like a kidney bean just to keep some trees safe and make it work. We are aware of the problems of mosquitoes with horses, certainly, and we do not want to cause that problem to the folks there.
Thank you.
When the request originally came to me last March, this is how long you asked, could we wait 2 weeks? Well, this original request came on March 23rd, 2009, and we couldn't work out an agreement on the, would they go ahead and give us even the easement for the drainage piping and the area that we were going to go ahead and put this detention pond in. They originally had asked for $200,000 in addition for this pavilion and to help clear out the sandlot area and to make some improvements at the track itself. And that's when I told them that the only way that we would go ahead and agree to that would be conditions similar to what you had stated. So then we start working just on the drainage, because I didn't feel like if they said no, let's say they said no, we're not going to go ahead and give you the preservation right now, we still have the drainage problem, and it's still affecting people in that area. So we are trying to separate the two issues, one being drainage that is affecting citizens in that area, and Larry, if you could also explain why we can't put the drainage out onto Knox Avenue or Magnolia, that we are going in the other direction, because the existing area just...
Certainly. The area is extremely flat through there. There are no major drainage pipes in the area. The pipe that Ms. Thompson put down in front of her house with SCDOT is one of the few pipes that are there, and basically it flows down toward our pump station. As she said, we have been very busy with that sewage pump station there on Knox Ave, actually converting it to one that when it floods, it does not harm it, and we're able to keep stormwater out of it, which we don't want to be treating stormwater with sewage, so we've done quite a bit of work in there. This problem does go back several years when Mr. Mike Hosang built a house over there. several years ago. He and I had a discussion. We did some drainage ditching along Knox Avenue then. Unfortunately, the general fall of the land is toward Ms. Thompson's property and toward our pump station. The water was going into the woods there in the vicinity of the end of the barn where you see the purple square on your picture right there. So that is all we have been able to do with it. Now, up at the other end, over toward Magnolia, where the carriage drive enters into the area, there is a triangular piece of ground. It does have trees on it. I don't want to call them specimen trees, but there are some fairly decent trees there. That area is behind Mr. Buzz Rich's home, and that area does not flood to the extent that Ms. Thompson's property does, but I have had calls from Mr. Rich that, you know, they were having some issues out there too. Again, not to the extent that Ms. Thompson has, but with the ground being so flat. So, you know, I have had contact with three of the four property owners there asking for some help and some relief. That's kind of the background and the history of what we've done out there over the years.
Any other questions of Larry?
No, not of Larry.
I have
but
a suggestion that it borders on yours. It goes along with yours. Why don't we table this and let some things lend themselves a little bit to a smaller group meeting, you know, to get going. And I would say that let a couple of us meet, first of all, with Woody and whoever else.
Okay.
And just talk about the thing, not decide anything, of course. That's up to council and Whitney Trust. But we have talked before. We've had a couple of little meetings, and it's just time now to get back together. And this all kind of comes together.
I'd be very much in favor of that. I think it's a good opportunity to kind of get on the same table and ultimately get to where we all want to get to.
Yeah, yeah. And then we can take this up at a later date, if that's satisfactory.
Well, like I said, it's been 10 months since I've gotten the original request, so it's not something that has to be done immediately.
No, and it's an opportune time to take a long-term look at the future of Whitney Polo Field.
Right, right.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, Mr. City Manager. May I request that we be notified should this issue come up before you in any format until you actually make a final recommendation?
Oh, certainly. Any voting decisions or that kind of thing would certainly come. It would be in public, obviously.
Yeah,
as
I'd
you
just
well
love
know.
To have I'd love to have a notice sent to me.
Sure,
that this coming.
That's fine.
If that's
you had a notice sent to you, Mrs. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Dwar.
You're right there on it, so certainly, sure. And there are probably some other neighbors along that street too, or equally as concerned, perhaps as you, or at least somewhat that are interested too. So we could notify all the few homes there on that block.
Thank you.
That'd be very appropriate.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, there's a comment from...
I think John Wade.
Yes, sir.
John Wade, 1180 Cornish. Just observation. I don't have a personal stake in the lady that was here earlier with the house on Highland Park, nor do I have a personal stake in this one. But, Mr. Mayor, I heard you say with the former lady... that parameters of moving in a house maybe should be checked before they move into a location. If I understood Ms. Thompson just earlier and her disagreeing with the changes that this lady wanted to do, she was pretty opposed to those and y'all allowing for her to come out of this district. And when I listen to her now, and if I understood correctly, this house was built 9 years ago, did she not check ahead of time to see if this property was flooding? It seems to me like the tables have totally turned, that she's got a lot on her agenda personally, and I heard her say she's got several items for the better of the community and four items for her personally. She may have spent a lot of money. I don't know. I do know that area floods, but it seems like the tables have changed a lot right here.
Well, I can't answer your question. I think she would be one that could answer that question. 9 years, though, a lot of things change in 9 years. I don't know if trees have been cut down and that kind of thing or what.
The property was developed in 1990. We purchased it 9 years ago. Before I purchased it, the property was contingent upon a soil assessment survey, which I had done by a contractor out of Augusta. I was going to put an addition on the back of the house and potentially a future barn. We did have the drainage issues looked at very intently, which is why I had a copy of the drainage of the Whitney Polo Field from the 1930s. It was not until the Whitney Trust cleared a lot of the trees and lowered the depth of the ditches on the interior part of that polo field that we started having a problem. When I first came to Aiken and you went to the Whitney Polo Field to watch a polo match, you used to drive across the lot that Mr. Morris referenced as Mike and Lisa Hosang's, and there was a gate there. The ditches on both sides of that racetrack were very, very deep. Now, the Whitney Trust uses the side on the interior part of the polo field for parking. The ditches are no longer deep. I can walk across them almost as a flat piece of land. They used to be as deep as the one that I maintain, which is about a 4-foot to 6-foot deep ditch. So the problems that I am experiencing are not of my own making. So I hope that clarifies your concerns.
Mine, like I said, weren't concerns. Mine were just comments on observation. It seems like the tables had been turned when it was one property versus the other property owner. And that was just my comments on those.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just add, though, based on what Ms. Thompson just said and what we're trying to achieve with the Whitney Field and giving them some relief based on what they did to create a problem as we go forward. How much are we trying to help them to improve the storm water situation based on a problem that was created man-made? And as we further have discussion, that's on the table to look at as well.
That's a very good point.
I would just have a point of order. Do we either need to withdraw the motion or to vote it down if we're going to table this issue? Just move to continue it, but the original motion was to...
Right. Yeah, we had a motion and second to go ahead and approve this resolution.
So we should vote on that and then...
You should vote to withdraw that motion.
Okay, let's vote to withdraw it and start all over again.
Who made the motion? Okay, would you agree to withdraw the motion? Okay.
Yes, I'll move to withdraw the motion.
Okay, who seconded that? Reggie, okay. All right. And you agree, Reggie?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir. All right, let's start all over then. Do we have a motion and a second to table this?
So move, Mr. Mayor, that we table.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All right. Show of hands, please. Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 6 is a resolution authorizing acceptance of agreement with the Bishop of Charleston. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes. Let me read this by its title. It's a resolution authorizing acceptance of an easement agreement with the Bishop of Charleston to install and maintain landscaping, lighting, and an irrigation system on property located at 138 Fairfield Street Southeast. A number of years ago, the Bishop of Charleston, the Catholic Church, purchased the Dykes Lumber Company on Fairfield Street. The building has been subsequently removed, and we have tried to make improvements on a number of the alleyways and streets over the last probably 10 years in the downtown area. This area along C Lane has a number of overhead wires. It's somewhat unsightly. We have been trying to work with the property owners that front on Park Avenue to improve this area. And one of the things to get this improved, it was to go ahead and get an easement that we could bury the wiring and then put some landscaping along this area to improve the looks of that entire area. And of course, the city will be owning the depot right at the very end of C Lane at Union Street. After a long period of time working through, we think we have bureaucracy in the city of Aiken. Well, in the Catholic Church, there's also bureaucracy. And the Bishop of Charleston has finally approved this, and so we are coming forward tonight with this resolution, which would allow us to go ahead and to get this easement to put underground wiring and landscaping along C Lane from Fairfield Street to Union Street. So, Mr. Mayor?
Very good. Thank you. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve a resolution authorizing acceptance of an easement agreement with Bishop of Charleston to install and maintain landscaping, lighting, and an irrigation system on property located at 138 Fairfield Street Southeast.
Okay, and I'll second. Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Katie is
here. Yes, Katie, you're here.
We have one more item here, petition. Help us out a little bit.
Sorry, I had to go around and give my feedback to Ed.
Okay.
My name's Katie Lipscomb. I live at 307 Cherbourg Place in Fred's neighborhood, and we're hoping there's no going to be an overlay district in there. But I'm here because I'm concerned about the proposed highway overlay district and its effect that it's going to have on small business. I've lived in Aiken since 1984, and I've owned a small business in Aiken Material Things, which is a fabric and home furnishing store, for 16 years. I just moved into my fourth location. I was downtown. I was in a duplex shopping center. Moved to a strip center, and now I've moved into a larger building in that strip center. For the last 4 years, I looked for property where I could build a shop for myself. I have some wild visionary ideas for building a shop. I'm in the design business. And after I ran the numbers for 4 years on different properties, I just couldn't make the numbers work. I'm not a rich person, and I'm not a risk taker either. You know, I could have built something that had somebody else with me that I was going to have to lease, but it didn't matter. I couldn't make the numbers work, and that's just my situation. And I'm only telling you that just so you know that I've run the numbers. I've tried to. I can look at the overlay district guidelines and understand what their costs are going to be. So I sort of went into a tizzy when I happened upon the overlay district guidelines by accident. I was looking at the design review board minutes or agenda for another reason and started reading it, and I just was like, that was the first I'd really heard of it as a small bit. I mean, I'd heard of highway overlay district but seen no details. So I started looking at the details. And Dawn and Leslie can tell you what I thought about them just on the first a reading of them, and it's not because I'm an obstructionist. I mean, I dream about charming architecture and taking care of the blight in the neighborhoods in Aiken, but I know what the costs will be to small businesses. Then, after I talked to them, I started calling and talking to other businesses, and there's four main things that reason I wanted to come here tonight. I don't want to talk about details of it. It's not the place, but I don't think people understand what this is. I know y'all sent out however many letters to property owners, and then I read the feedback that came back that was in the design review board agenda. I didn't see any feedback from small business in there. I saw a bunch from realtors, couple property owners, but I didn't see any small business, so I started thinking, why is small business not even looking at this? Well, then I started calling people. Nobody knows anything about it. Nobody understands it. So I'm like, well, who got those letters? And then all of a sudden it dawned on me. It's the property owners that got them. Small business doesn't own anything in this town. They rent it. So they haven't gotten any letters. then I started calling. I said, well, surely so-and-so knows something about it. Nobody knows anything. So I'm really here tonight to say to you all, please, before we go any further on this, can we slow down, stop, and get some feedback from the small businesses? I don't think that most small businesses are going to dig in and try and figure out what's in there either, or think about how it's going to affect them over 20 years. I do, because, I mean, I've grown over 16 years, and I'm in four locations. I would really like to have my own building. But I stopped off and gave Ed my comments to go on the way up here, and I've got a copy if y'all want to pass it around. It goes into a lot more detail. But I don't ever see anybody really looking at numbers, doing any what if.
Certainly should.
Looking at the what if analysis.
They ought to be looking at their numbers.
Whom, our numbers?
No, I say the people should be looking at their, you're talking about their profit loss, all that, all those numbers.
No, I'm
business.
Talking about, I don't see the city doing any economic feasibility studies or what if studies. You know, I asked Leslie, can we please just, this came on my radar last week. I've been concerned with it. Let's walk through the areas and look at the buildings that are there and look at the small businesses that are in them and see how this affects them. Let's really run a number on if, you know, a situation. I want to buy this property. I want to renovate it. I want to follow these guidelines and see what kind of cost it's going to cost somebody. And then let's look at the gross, y'all have the gross sales figures for all of us, as we all know. It's another subject. And look at, I mean, let's do an economic feasibility. It's, you know, the document, I'm not an obstructionist. And I'm really not here for me. I'm going to be in my building for the next 5 to 10 years. I made a decision. I'm going to continue to rent. But I want to see small business grow. And I want us to look at how this document affects small business. We need it for the Walgreens and the CVSs and the large planned projects, but I think they already get approvals anyway. But we need to, just as an example, my main competitor is in Augusta. They just built a fabulous, and I'm not being facetious, Butler building. It's got a beautiful facade. They did industrial lighting on it. They have a fabulous modern fountain in front of it. And then if I go to build a building and I have to have brick, no metal, not getting into details here, but I can't compete. I don't even have the volume they have. But my prices for my product, and I'm from a retail background. I mean, you can look at it from services. You can look at it from lawyer offices. I mean, it's just small business. And I think, I don't know if it'd be better to have two documents. I think we need the standards. But we got to look at it before it goes too far and get some feedback.
Katie, are you a member of the Chamber of Commerce?
I certainly am, sir.
Have you shared your thoughts with them?
I've talked to a few people who were on the board that looked at it. Because, like I said, it came up last week. I'm trying to run a business. And
well, I think that's one of the proper places to go and talk to the chamber. Obviously, they've got 1,000 or so plus businesses. The purpose here is to try to get information. You know, that letter went out, not as a verdict, we're going to do this. It was asking, what do you think about these things?
But my point is that most of the small businesses didn't get the letter.
Well, I certainly guess you could say they should have gone to the small businesses as well. But the point is, who owns the property that's going to be affected by some of the changes? Now, most of the buildings that are out there now probably won't undergo much change at all, if any.
Is that what we want? We don't want those to change?
The new ones, well, how restrictive do you want us to get?
I want us to encourage them to change and help them change.
We're talking about, basically, I think, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking basically about new facilities of certain square footage and those kinds of things. I don't have it in front of me, but not necessarily changing everything that's along the major roads is what we're talking about.
There's where else is business in this town except along those roads?
I'm not arguing with that. All I'm saying is what we're talking about. Let us talk, and so everybody understands what we're talking about. You're making it almost sound like it's a verdict that city council has made already, and it's going to hurt the businesses. Maybe it will, and maybe it won't. I hope it won't.
But that's what I said. I'm not saying it's good or bad, Fred. I'm saying that people don't understand it, and we haven't communicated with them.
Okay, well, that's a wonderful point you're making now. Ed Evans, can you talk to this subject a minute? Where's Ed?
While he comes down, Mr. Mayor, I would point out that the Chamber has been involved very closely with the Design Review Board in reviewing the initial proposal.
Okay.
And in fact, they both worked hand-to-hand. I was at a work session where the subject was brought up. And there's a lot of concerns, you're right, about this program and whether it should even come into existence. We've never discussed it at council level. I think it's at the Planning Commission level, and it will come to us.
We discussed it very minimally,
generally,
I think,
yes.
But because it's the Planning Commission, and Mr. Evans had done the research.
It came to City Council last fall to ask, should we go ahead and send out letters first or have public hearings first, because we had heard from the Chamber of Commerce last spring, and they had given it kind of their blessing, but they were concerned about some of the smaller buildings, and so we said, no, let's go. Council said, let's put it back, let's have that delay for about 6 months, and send out the letters, and then have the public hearings, and we'll get it probably back again in the spring.
Yeah, and initially, the Chamber's recommendations, as I recall, would have had the effect of eliminating almost every small building on, if you just take Whiskey Road, because they wanted it to apply to buildings of a certain size, which generally would have been the banks and the restaurants and so forth. I don't know how it would apply to a shopping center, to Center South or to other shopping centers.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, in previous conversations that Katie and I have had regarding this subject, I think Katie is very much in agreement with the fact that we do need something to improve the aesthetics along these roadways. Mm-hmm. But the manner in which we go about that is of great concern. It seems as though, now, here again, when Bill Reynolds came with the Planning Commission to seek Council's guidance, we did have questions regarding this. My questions were, was it going to affect existing businesses, or was this strictly for new businesses that were going to locate within these corridors? Since that time, I've had several conversations with a lot of concerned citizens regarding this piece of legislation, and I just think we need to sit down. We need to analyze this thing and give it utmost consideration. There's a lot of this, and I know the Planning Commission has a lot on their plate, but there's some of this. It looks like it's been cut and pasted from another city, and I think the City of Aiken deserves better than that, and Katie has shared that with me. I think we can look at this, we can attack this from a proactive standpoint. If once we decide we know we're not in the best of economic times, we don't want to do anything that's going to hurt a business owner within this city. We want to do everything we can to help them survive. If we go forward with this, we set forth the proper guidelines that we need, something that is unique to the City of Aiken, something that's just not in other cities that they utilize, something that's going to enhance our city and do it in a manner that's not going to hurt our businesses. Once we do that, if we set that out 2 years in advance, and then possibly incentivize it so that someone who adheres to that before the regulation comes in place receives an incentive from the city for doing that. I think there's ways that we can soften this, ways that we can buffer this, and make it work for our city. And achieve the goals that we wish to accomplish, but do it in a manner that's not going to lay another layer of bureaucracy upon our business owners.
I support that.
I have ideas about that, too. I said I have ideas about that, too. But really, the main reason, Gary jokingly said to me a little while ago, keep it short, Katie. But my main reason is...
Now, in my defense, Katie, I've known you for a long time, so I felt like I needed to say that.
You know, I don't know how far along it is in the process. I don't understand the process. Y'all never see me up here. I'm just saying, before it gets too far and then it's ready to go get real feedback and ready to become an ordinance, let's get some feedback from small business. You mentioned the chamber, but I'm a member of the chamber and I read every one of their newsletters and I have not seen any details. I know that they had a committee. I saw that they had a committee. I didn't even understand what highway overlay district meant. I mean, I had no idea it was for every... Until I read it the other day, I didn't have a clue. And now when I talk to people, even people who got the letter, they're like, well, we weren't sure what that meant. Or, you know, I talked to Chad Ingram today, who owns Kent's Corners. He said, yeah, I got it and read something about the height of my canopies, but I really didn't understand it and look at it. So, I mean... Just want to make sure we get small business feedback. That's the main reason I'm here.
Absolutely.
Okay, let me just add that we have in the back Liz Stewart, who's the new chair of the chamber, and I'm sure she would love to have a copy of this. She's not one that will just sit and just look at it, but we'll...
I don't know if there was an extra one, but if there's not...
Well, we can share it with her, but she will be one that will pursue some of the things that you've got in this document. So.
Okay.
If you need a copy, take mine. I'll get another one easily.
I've got a question. Was it addressed to just the property owners as far as the overlay district, or was it addressed to all the people that had business licenses?
That's a good list of things. Thank you.
The letter about 2,000 letters were sent out, and they covered all the property owners. And it's the property owners that would be affected, not the business owners, because it's when we're talking about properties that are converted to business or new buildings or major renovation. Otherwise, everything else is grandfathered in that's currently out there.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes. John?
John Wade, 1180 Cornish. I want to reiterate what I've said before on this, that the property owners are still not understanding that the city of Aiken has the water. And the state DHEC says that if you've got available water within a certain distance, it's half mile, and on some situations, some a little bit further, that you have to tie them to the city water. So I do agree that the business owners need to be notified. I think the property owners need to be notified first because they are the property owners. But the business owners that want to buy that piece of property are the ones that's going to burden all that expense. And it's not only the expense of the added type of materials, but also the quantity of materials that y'all are going to add for height and stuff. And I'm actually working on a steel building issue that steel buildings now, on the surface of the panels, they have a stucco material, they have a rock material, but they aren't even allowed in this. I don't think that there's enough, I don't think anybody's looked in-depthly into what this is going to cost someone to do a project. And I mean that with the Planning and Zoning Board and the Design Review Board, and I know that they work hard on it because I've been at their work sessions. But I don't think that you're getting any builders or contractors to come in or manufacturers say, hey, this is what we have. And so I don't think that people really realize how big this is. And it's business owner and property owners or potential business owners.
Right. Well, thank you, John, for your comments. Katie, thank you so much for yours, too, and thanks for being here.
Can I add that with Katie, she was a bit nervous about coming. This is the first meeting, she said, to speak before council on this issue. She has passion for it. It's near and dear to her heart. And as she said over and over, she's not trying to be an obstructionist, but she just wants to make sure that people are informed of what's involved with these district guidelines. So thank you, Katie, for coming.
Yeah. Just so council understands where it's at, because the question was, you know, where is it at in the process? The Planning Commission started reviewing this over a year ago, and we've tried to get input from the chamber. We thought that was the proper place to go. It currently, after it went to City Council last fall, and the letters were sent out to the various property owners, which then we received the comments over the last couple of months, and we did get a lot of comments and questions and concerns from individuals, because again, it wasn't just the property owners, but in many cases it was the property owner even behind that property owner that was fronting, so that if somebody came and wanted to collectively pool together several properties in one area for future development, they could do so. Currently, it's scheduled to be on the agenda for tomorrow night at the Planning Commission meeting. The Planning Commission tomorrow night will certainly get input from a lot of folks. Depending on what input they get, they again could continue it to review it some more and get more input if they wanted to. They could approve it and send it on to City Council, and then we'll have at least two hearings here. A lot of times we'll take what they have. Give you a good example would be the old Aiken area. And we took that document that we got from the Planning Commission, and we spent probably 6 months on it, reviewing it page by page and making corrections and changes and looking at it. We also had at one point, probably about 2 or 3 years ago, what we called the big box ordinance, which was taking a look at large shopping centers or individual stores that were a large size, and took that and reviewed it and made changes. So again, just because it comes from the Planning Commission, or the Planning Commission could just deny, but even if they deny it, it still comes back to City Council. We could spend as little or as much time on those documents as you would like to, and we could certainly hold special sessions with key groups. We could get other information you want. But tomorrow it is on the agenda. It's been advertised, and so you know we need to go forward with that process because it has been legally advertised to be on the agenda. And I assume that there's going to be numerous individuals that will show up at that meeting for and against the thing. But depending on what happens, it could either come to us at the next meeting in January, or we could get it and continue it and get more information depending on what council would like to see. Yeah. Work session. Just the work session, okay. February, isn't it? Okay.
Ed, the work session, will it be open meeting in here? It'll be in the here.
They're typically in 204.
People can come to this.
Oh, absolutely. It's
open to the public.
It's not intended as a public hearing. Sometimes it can be opened up for public comment. Typically,
right.
It's just the commission.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to recognize the Aiken Standard and thank them for televising these proceedings. This is the first time it's being done, and it will allow some transparency, allow a lot of citizens who just can't take the time to be out late at night to see our proceedings, and I'm delighted and really appreciate their efforts to open up government to the citizens.
Very good. Yes. I think we all like that. Thank you.
And let me just piggyback on that. During these economic times, that was an issue that Dick and I discussed on more than one occasion, and the cost during this recessionary period was expensive. So we really appreciate Standard being here and taking up the expense to go ahead and do this.
Absolutely. Okay, there's nothing else on our agenda. We're complete. Thank you, everyone, for being here. We are adjourned.